This is the McCann Dogs Agility Podcast. I'm Kale McCann.
And I'm Jamie Morrow. We are professional dog trainers, members of Agility Team Canada, and together, we've been teaching dog agility for nearly 20 years.
Some nights after teaching classes, we'll spend hours talking about training, about our goals, and also some of the challenges we're facing and what we're going to do to conquer them.
And that's exactly what we're going to do in this podcast. Whether you're new to agility or competing at a world-class level, we're excited to have you listen in on our conversation.
So let's head to the line. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the After Class Podcast with your hosts, P and Pod. We're in a mood, guys.
Watch out.
Yep, it's going to be a good one. It's a lovely evening here in Ontario, Canada, and we're happy because sometimes when we're shooting this podcast, it's very hot.
Very hot.
And it's really nice, but we're here.
We're AC, though.
We're switching out our wine glasses for some White Claws tonight, so... Oh, that was a good one.
That was a good one.
I don't know if I'm going to like my flavor, so we'll get the...
Cheers.
Cheers. We'll get the DL in a little bit. Oh,
surprising. Good. That's what you said about the last spicy one.
No, it's better than the spicy one.
Okay.
Anyways, episode 11, I believe, and we're going to do something a little bit different today. What we are going to do is actually we've had some of our members of the McCann Dogs Agility Patreon page. So we have an online coaching program. They have submitted. They have submitted some some questions for us to answer about on all kinds of different topics. And there's some really good ones in here. So we're going to go through and we are going to answer some of these questions. So I guess we'll decide what the title is after because we don't really
know.
We don't know really what we're going to talk about. Okay, so let's just jump right into it. The first, actually, there's several questions from our dear friend Shandy Blake, who is a agility competitor from Ontario, Ottawa. Okay. First question is mental management, tips and tricks to improve. Is it just the more you do, the better you get? It's a good question. Mental management, I think, is like...
I think it's the toughest part.
I couldn't agree more. I think like you do the dog training and you start to...
That's fun. No pressure.
Yeah, do all those types of things. And then when you start to compete, I think even regardless of what level you're at, I think the mental management part of it is really, really difficult because it's hard to deal with like the nerves of the whole thing if you're like a nervous type of person or if you are a competitive person and you put a lot of pressure on yourself. I think that the mental management can be like a bunch of things because there's certain things that will bother or distract or whatever.
Or if you don't have a good run, how to rally back from that.
Yeah, that can be really difficult. So tips and tricks to improve and or is it something that you just, the more you do it, you get the better at it? What do you think about that? The more you do, the better you get at it?
I would agree because then you can kind of figure out what might stress you out or what might stress your dog out and come up with a game plan to try to figure that out. We always say try to find your trial routine for the dog, but you kind of have to find your trial routine for yourself too. Yeah,
that's a really good point. I definitely think that you can improve over time. Absolutely. I do think that you also can like go up and down with your progression with it. I think sometimes it depends like what competition you're at or
the people that you're around.
Yeah. What's going on in your life. Like I think I think there's lots of things that can change. And I think the most important thing with mental management, and you kind of already said this, is being able to like pull yourself out of it. So being able to figure out tactics for that, whether it's like leaning into like a friend or a coach or, you know, having some ideas of how you're going to do things. Like I remember years ago when we were doing some mental management stuff for like a world team competition. I don't remember who gave me this piece of advice, but it was really good. It was basically like, think about the things that you're most stressed out about or that you're most worried about or that's going to cause you to whatever, throw your mental game. Write out those things and then figure out what your solution is ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So that when you're in the moment, because we all know when we're in the moment, it's so much harder to like make a rational decision because you're already like, what was me and feeling sorry for yourself or mad or whatever the situation is. But you can be like, okay, I predicted that this could maybe be a possibility and this was my plan to work through it. And then, you know, stable unbothered self can help current self to say like, hey, you should do this. I thought that was a really good idea, whether it's like if the weather is going to stress you out or a piece of equipment or whatever it might be. So if I'm presented with this problem that could put stress on me, here's what I'm going to do to work through it.
Overcome it.
Which I guess means like the more you do it, the more you've seen those situations before and you're like, mm-hmm. okay, this didn't work for me in the past and I knew, you know, making this decision mm-hmm. has been good.
We've talked about this in previous podcasts, but we developed the Bitter Barn. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. that has been helpful to be able to have a moment or a few moments to kind of decompress, be angry, be upset, and then try to come out of it. But allowing yourself to have those moments because you also need to feel it too, I think.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point because I was talking to Shandy actually in the weekend because she was at a big event and she had messaged me and she was a little bit down in the dumps because she had a few bad runs. And, you know, in one sense, I kind of said like, get over it. You're going to be fine. Like, uh-huh. You're great. Just rally back. But then I also said like, go and be mad. Like,
allow yourself.
Go for a walk. Like, yeah. Because the fact
get that, it out.
The fact that you care so much and that you're competitive and you want to do well, that's a really great thing because mm-hmm. that means that you're probably going to do well because you have that fire in your belly and you want to do well. I think that that's a really good trait for a competitor. But it also can't be the thing that holds you back mm-hmm. because you're just so consumed about being perfect or whatever. If you want to be perfect in the sport of agility, move on to a different sport because it's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So anyways, tips and tricks to improve. I think we gave you a couple here. Definitely the more you do, the better you get. You know, in Shandy's particular case, I know she hasn't done a lot of big events in her life. She's done maybe, I think when I asked her on the weekend, she said she had done like one or something, one or two. And I was like, okay, like give yourself a break.
Yeah.
Like, how many big events have you done?
I don't even know, but there's lots of events that I still.
100?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like lots, right? Yeah. I've done hundreds, I'm sure.
I haven't done any events since COVID, so I can just imagine coming back from COVID. That's going to be, you know,
yeah,
a little bit anxious.
Take it easy on yourself. But anyways, I love mental management stuff. I think it's really good, and it's definitely something that I wasn't so good at when I was younger. And then as I got older, I definitely got better.
A good support system. And I think that is a big deal too, having a person to be able to say, have a moment with you and be like, yeah, that really did suck. Or basically say, okay, pull it together. Yep. You got lots of runs left.
Suck it up, buttercup. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's so true. Having good people around you is really helpful. Okay. Second question, which is unrelated to the first, which is great. Do you get your dogs worked on at a competition? I've heard pros and cons of body work while competing. I was wondering what your thoughts were. Well, yes. Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. But it just depends, really.
Yes. But I also feel like the body worker would know how much to work on mm-hmm. the dog. And I don't think that if they were sore, they would be, you know, digging in so deeply, and they might give us some advice saying mm-hmm. that, you know, this is an area that you need to be careful about, or mm-hmm. they may say, you know, you might need to pull your dog.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why I utilize a body worker throughout the event.
I think to be like completely honest, if I was to choose a body worker to work on my dogs, I'd be very selective on the person that does it. And I also would go with like a massage, like muscle person over a chiropractor. I typically don't ever get my dog chiropractic work when I'm at an event unless there's some type of issue. And typically, if there was some type of issue, I probably wouldn't run the dog then after mm-hmm. that, after getting adjusted. I do often get the dog adjusted before going to event, though.
And after.
And after, with like enough days that the dog, I wouldn't do it like the day before. I would do it like really early in the week. And again, the chiropractors we use, Roxanne Partigak and Meg Robinson, both of them are so good about only adjusting what they need to adjust. Mm-hmm. They don't just like, they are very good at saying, she's good. You're mm-hmm. good to go. And I think that that's really, really important.
And they know our dogs.
Absolutely. Which is very, very confidence building. And then so if you do get your dog worked on at an event, it can be really helpful. It's a great way to warm up their muscles. I know when we go to Worlds, we travel with a body worker all of the time. And our dogs see her before and after every single run as part of their warm up. So, mm-hmm. You know, loosening up the muscles and just making sure everything's good.
Healthy.
Working
strained.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And often I've been to several world events with Diamond Ruman, and my dog has left the event better than when she came in. Mm-hmm. You've probably had that before too.
Yeah, I have. Mm-hmm.
Because like something's a little bit out and they get worked on right away. And by out, I mean like their muscles like a little bit
tight
or something like that. And then it gets addressed right away. Mm-hmm. So then they're not running run after run after run with something. So if you do have access to a body worker to do, you know, to work on your dog throughout the weekend, I think that's a great suggestion. Again, we're not experts in this field. We can only speak from experience, but I would definitely say with the muscle part, yes, all weekend. And I personally wouldn't suggest having chiropractic work all weekend or not. But it depends on the dog.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Here's another question. When is the best time to add a new puppy to the house? Definitely not looking for myself. This is Shandy who's still talking. But when is your older dog at a good spot to bring in a puppy? And when are they in like maintenance mode and it's just like fine tuning and tweaking?
Mm. I think this is a good question, but I also feel it's a little bit dog and handler focused depending on where you're at in your training.
Yeah.
I think 4 or 5.
Yeah. I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, you've got probably a few competitions under your belt. Things are pretty comfortable. There's mm-hmm. always going to be things that you need to maintain or train a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you've got a good understanding of each other.
I would definitely agree. I mean, Beeline, my dog is she'll be 5 this year. And I definitely feel she's at like the maintaining mode now. But it's sort of a weird thing because for 2 years of her life, we were in COVID and she wasn't really competing. So I have like an experienced trained dog who hasn't really competed. So maybe it's a bit of a weird scenario.
Yeah.
But I also have no other people who have like 5 or 6 year old dogs and like they're just starting to put it together. So like adding a new puppy to the mix maybe wouldn't be a good thing.
Exactly.
Like you should focus on that competition dog. But if you think about it.
And I also think it depends on how much time you have in your personal life to be able to.
Are you a professional dog trainer or is this like a side hobby?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of work.
It does take a lot of work. But if you think about it, like I would say you're not really like full on competing with the dog until they're what, like 3?
Yep.
Ish.
Yep.
And so by the time the dog is like 4 or 5, by the time your puppy would be running, your current competition dog would be like 8, 9, mm-hmm. which I think is good to have like an 8 or 9 year old dog and then a young dog just competing. I think that's a good mix because then you're doing tons of training and then the other dog's in maintenance
and mode. Yeah. And it takes the pressure off the older dog too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm. That was a good answer.
Yeah, liked it.
Okay, here's one.
Okay.
Which world event is your absolute favorite to attend?
I know yours.
Yes, you do. So of the 4 world events, we have both attended the WAO and the IFCS.
Yep.
And the European Open.
Yep.
Neither one of us have attended the FCI World Championships. That's on my bucket list. That's my goal with Beeline. But out of the 3 that we've attended, which one's your favorite?
I can't really decide.
Yeah.
I like different things about them. Mm. Like I like IFCS because you get to see everyone's run. And
because it's one ring.
Yeah, it's I one like ring. That too. But it's long days.
So long.
And it's, I believe it's a 5-day event. Mm-hmm. So it's a really long event, and it can be exhausting.
Back to mental management. Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I like WAO because I think that you get to run your dog more if you mm-hmm. qualify. But you don't get to see everyone's runs.
No, it's definitely a little bit more chaotic there, but I think that the event is run really well. Like mm-hmm. I feel like it really feels like a world championship. Everything, there's like, I don't know, big signs everywhere and like it just feels like.
And I also like how they're thinking forward with the jump height changes. Like I think that they're thinking about the dogs. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that that's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think this is horrible to say, but it's a podcast. We get to say what we want. But a lot of it has to do with like the team as well, like how the team gels together, what the coaching's like, management, like how everybody's personalities and stuff jive. Because I've been to some, you know, events where the actual event itself was great, but the team experience was horrible. Mm-hmm. And then I've been other places where like the event really wasn't that run well run and it wasn't that great.
But the team experience.
The team was like, well, this is crappy, so let's just like rally together. Like I went to, I can't remember what IFCS one it was, but it just, there was a few things like weather was horrible and our team was just awesome. Like everybody was just super supportive and was like, okay, we're all in this together. Like it was just a really great app. Like everybody just got so close that weekend and it was just really fun. So I don't know. It depends. But I don't, I'm not a big like EO fan anymore. Not because I don't think EO is great, but I'm a princess and I don't like competing. Like I don't like flying all the way overseas.
The bees. The bees are an issue for Gail when you run outside.
I don't like the bees. I don't like dust storms. I don't like extreme heat. But if I'm jumping on a plane and I'm going to travel all the way over there, the conditions need to be perfect for me because otherwise it's just irritating. But maybe that's one of those mental management things I need to get over.
Oh, it could be.
I'm not so good with bees. Yeah. Literally, people were getting stung while they were running. And I have like a weird phobia of bees. I mean, I name my dog Bee, which makes no sense, but I don't like bees at all. I know they're good for the world, but they need to stay over there. Okay. This is a, I don't even know if we should leave this one to the end, but maybe we'll talk about it now. And I don't really even know how I'm going to answer this one.
Okay.
If you were only to ever compete again or only ever coach again, which would you choose and why?
Can you still train?
I would assume so. Mm. Oh, that's a good actually. Mm-hmm. You're right. Because we like training.
I love training.
Yeah. I don't know. I think if you asked me like years ago, I would like 100%, I would not coach and I would only compete. Mm-hmm. But now it's like more of a toss up because I really like coaching. Mm-hmm. I really like even this past weekend when everybody was at Canadian Open, like I'm so curious to see how everyone's going. Like you get really invested in people and like their success. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of want to
get excited for them.
I know. I was like watching a few people's like runs back and I was like, oh, they were so good. Like, it's just so exciting. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I guess it would be really sad not to compete.
You can't answer it.
No, I honestly don't know. That's so hard. Mm-hmm. I really like
both of them.
Can we
skip this one?
Yeah, we'll skip it.
Okay, let's skip.
I think I like them, like, for different reasons. So it's hard. That wasn't a very good answer. Okay, this next question is from Mary Smith from Melbourne, Australia. And at the end of it, it says, this one's a little juicy.
Oh, goodness.
Okay.
Here we go.
What do you do when you are with negative people at an agility trial, whether they are complaining about the course, or the judge, or whatever? How do you rise above if avoiding them isn't really an option? Have you been in this situation before?
Yeah, but you're usually around more than just that one person. Mm-hmm. And I would try to gravitate towards the people that were uplifting and fun and encouraging to try to keep my head in the game.
Yeah. It can be challenging if, like, you're traveling with that person or you're, like, in a like a crating area with them or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think that's kind of where, like, communication needs to come in. And you can even, like, put it on yourself to be like, I'm in a funk. I need some space. Mm-hmm. It's not like I need space from you. Mm-hmm. I just need space like for myself.
Or if you know that about the person, like try to come up with a game plan before. So maybe bring like, I don't know if you have an older dog so that you have to take the dog for lots of walks.
Yeah. Have a head of an out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it is. Obviously, you want to try to avoid it if that's what you can do. And then if you can't, you're going to have to come up with some tactics because what you don't want to do is like have your weekend ruined because of somebody else.
And that's all you can think about and it consumes you because you need to be focused on what you're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it can be hard. Sometimes it can really be difficult. I mean, we've been in lots of scenarios where like one of us has been doing really well and the other one has not been doing really well. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we're best friends. We train together. We literally do everything together. We dress the same. Like we're absolutely ridiculous. But what happens is like if James having a bad time or I'm having a bad time, you truly like feel bad for the other person and then you want to help them. But then that takes away from what you're doing. So like you kind of have to have that like balance. Mm-hmm. But also when it comes to like people that you're there with, there's lots of times where we're able to be like
a buffer.
Yeah, a buffer. Or you're like, okay, go do your thing. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about me.
Yeah.
Because I'm having my moment. I'm having my what was me moment. You go. You kick ass. We'll talk about it after.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that like communication, I think that can be really difficult.
It can be hard.
Yeah. The people that you surround yourself with at a trial or a competition is can be massively effective on people.
Yeah.
Positive or negative. Positive or negative.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, that can be a really hard one. Especially, too, if you're not as experienced.
Or good music.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good thing to do. I will do that in walkthroughs quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Put my earphones in, listen to music so that people don't talk to me. Mm-hmm. Not because I'm trying to be snobby, but it's just like I want to
keep you focused. Yeah, I want to get focus in the zone. Your own talk.
Yeah, especially too. Like one thing that's really challenging from anyone who's listening to us that is a coach themselves, you know, we've had all kinds of challenges being at a competition and being a coach because people just want to ask you questions. How are you handling this? Blah, 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 blah. And it can be really challenging to like find the balance between being helpful to the people that you want to be helpful with, but then not, you know, doing what you need to do for yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's not really about like negative people, but it is another challenge. Mm-hmm. Or it's like
distracting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it is challenging. And if it's something that really affects you, then you need to like just try to avoid that person in the future because it's just not worth it for you. Okay. Vanessa Lugo. I don't know if that's how you say your last name or not. L-U-G-O. Lugo?
Lugo.
From Miami, Florida. Hi, I'm new to agility. And when we do group practices, my dog runs 2 or 3 times around the obstacle course that we are doing that day and is super focused. But then she gets distracted and she runs away. Do you have any advice? My dog is 1.5 years old. So this is a great question, but I will say that it is a little bit challenging to answer because the answer kind of depends on why the dog's running away. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be where I would start with first. I would start to figure out like what the cause is. Like, are they running away and distracted because they're having fun mm-hmm. and they're like done with listening and they're going to self-reward? Yeah. Or are they stressed or worried and maybe we've overdone it? Like, I think that the root of the problem needs to be mm-hmm. decided first.
And try to be preventative to try to reward the dog before that happens and get success in so that it can't rehearse doing the wrong behavior.
There's that saying, quit while you're ahead.
Exactly.
We laugh every time I say saying because usually I botch them. I don't really know how you can say that one wrong, but I would probably find a way.
You would.
Yeah. But I think she sort of said she gets distracted and runs away. So my guess is that if she's distracted, it probably means that she's not really caring about what she's doing. So going down the lane you were, I think, is a good tactic. So quit while you're ahead for sure. But then, you know, if you do 2 or 3 obstacle courses and maybe you need to do 1.5 mm-hmm. and or be rewarding. Like, are you doing a whole course without rewarding your dog? Are you doing a few obstacles at a time? Like,
is it a specific obstacle that the dog is leaving? Like, is it avoiding an obstacle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is this in, was it group practices? So if it's in training, then maybe you need to be reinforcing the dog a lot more with whatever reward they like.
Mm-hmm. Maybe doing some individual agility practice by yourself first to gain the dog's confidence up and
without
then
distraction. And the other thing too is making sure that you're taking time to like train the individual skills to build up the value. So if you're doing a lot of obstacle courses, like maybe you need to be changing how you're practicing. Like maybe you need to just work on the A-frame a bunch of times or weave a bunch of times to build up the value of that obstacle so that becomes more important than running around and doing their own thing. And then if I had a dog that would leave work for whatever reason, I typically would be working more on like some obedience skills, like a really good recall, a leave it command, focus exercises, those types of things. And I would take a step back from agility. I would mm-hmm. focus on solving those issues first to build more of a bond, more of teamwork, more work ethic on the dog, and then circle back to agility. I think so many people put agility first and then like listening skills second. And then you get to a certain point in your agility where you can't progress now because the dog only does it when they feel like doing it. Mm-hmm. And that's
a little self-serving.
Yeah. So I would definitely break things down a little bit more.
More rewards. Allow the dog to be right more.
Yep. And also what are you practicing? Like mm-hmm. sometimes people are practicing things that are too hard for them and the dog. And so there's a lot of wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dog's like, I'm out. Mm-hmm. See ya.
And what are you using as your reward? Does the dog find that valuable
mm-hmm.
as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So hopefully there's a couple of tips there, Vanessa, that you'll find helpful. Okay, we got one more.
Okay.
Janine Collins from Franklin, Tennessee. Mm. I'm getting better at managing trial arousal for my almost 3-year-old dog, and we're getting trial experience now. But what's your routine for youngsters? Toy play, food treats, obedience, tricks, stretches, etc. I also noticed that he has a harder time with my first run, cueing on a turn, and I've had to make much stronger cues than normal in order to have him respect it. How has trial stress... how has trial stress manifested or changed your handling options from training? So essentially, if we have a dog that like stresses high... or gets pumped because they're excited, do we do things differently in trialing than we do when we're training to adapt to that dog, both in the ring or before the ring?
Yes.
The answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe we can talk about like, but actually
we have talked about this a little bit.
Yeah. Janine or whoever else is listening that, that is interested in this topic. We did a podcast, I think it might've been episode two.
Two. Yeah.
On high drive dogs. And we went into very intense detail about like our pre-ring routines and things like that, like working on high drive dogs. I definitely think that would be a really good one to go back and listen to. But just to kind of speak generally about it now as well, you do need to have some type of pregame thing, and it could be different than class because maybe they don't get as high at class. Mm-hmm. You know, for some dogs, using a using food rather than toy can calm the mind a bit more. Where other dogs, sometimes if you just like let them tug and like get their buzz out, sometimes they're better as well.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a release.
Mm-hmm. How long do you let them watch the ring for? Like we've had some dogs that we try to get them away from like watching the dogs in the ring ahead of time because it just gets them so pumped that they can't really think by the mm-hmm. time they get into the ring themselves.
Also trying to take advantage of the warm-up jump to mm-hmm. work on some of those turns and get them reinforced if that's a challenge that your dog has.
Yep.
Pre-placing the toy to kind of force the dog to get a good turn in and be successful.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And then in the ring, it is not uncommon to have to adapt your handling cues a little bit more. Like maybe you need to be a little bit earlier with your cues. Maybe you need to be a little bit more powerful with your collection cues. I even see this with my own dog when I'm training by myself versus when I'm in class. When I'm training by myself, my dog is perfection because there's like, I mean, she's high all the time. She's a border collie. Yeah. She's very high drive. But there's not that extra thing. But when I put her in class, she's got saucer eyes. She's got spit coming out of her mm-hmm. mouth. And sometimes I have to be a little firmer with how I tell her to collect. And I have to work through it a bit more. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't have a ton of trial experience. But I know that that will be something that happens. And that's not bad. It's just something you need to be prepared
aware of.
Yeah, yeah, you need to be ready for it. That's why dogs like that are really it's really helpful to do like fun matches and different classes or change locations mm-hmm. because I think you start to see different colors from your dog because if you're doing the same thing all the time.
They get comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They get used to it.
Yep.
It can be a little sometimes bit more challenging. Sometimes
just having a new dog introduced to your training experience can mm-hmm. change how the dog is.
Yeah. We've also done things like when we're training to make things a bit more like trial-like. We'll like play a lot of music in the room mm-hmm. and we'll put it really loud or when people are going, we'll have people cheering. Like clap and cheer mm-hmm. just to, like get the dog a little bit more excited, which actually can be really helpful for people who have dogs that are a little bit less motivated and you want to get them pumped up a little bit yep. more. You just raise the energy in the room and that sometimes flows through to the person and dog a little bit more. But yeah, it's definitely something that you should expect to happen and you need to try different things. Like, she said, but what's your routine with your youngsters? Not every dog has the same routine.
No.
So part of going to trials for the first time when you have a young dog is trying different things.
Finding out what works.
Yeah. There's been lots of times where I've like done a trial routine with a young dog that my other dog does. And halfway through the day, I'm like, well, that's not working. It's not working at all. So you got to switch things up a little bit.
Or one trial, you might have some success in the next one. It might go out the window too. So, you know, each trial
the worst might be. Is what happens when the dogs are like, oh, now I know what this trial is. Now I know exactly what's going to happen. And some dogs will get higher. You even see this sometimes in the day. Uh-huh. Some dogs, their first runs out, they're horrible. Uh-huh. And then they kind of settle in. And then I know lots of people who have dogs that are calm. And then Beeline's a bit like this. Then every time I take her to the ring, she knows what's going to happen and she gets more excited. Uh-huh. So you got to learn the dog.
Yeah. And the dog also could be feeding off your energy. So if you're feeling like a little anxious or nervous,
yep.
lots of dogs can sense that and be like, well, this is party time.
Yeah.
And take advantage of how you're feeling.
Yeah. Funky was always really good at that. She was always like way more pumped. Okay. There's two more little questions here that have to do with like fitness and some jumping things.
Okay.
Which I think we can answer now, but also we did just recently do, actually we've done a podcast on each of these topics where we went like talked for a lot longer about it. Number one was, how often, so this is from Lynn Cuthbert. She's from Stittsville, Ontario. How often during the week do you practice agility and how often do you focus on fitness?
Oh, I think I focus on fitness more than I focus on agility.
Mm-hmm. At a normal time, like not during COVID, but like when we were competing and things like that, like how often would you say you train a week?
Oh, I don't know.
For me, I think it depends on where the dog's at. Like when I'm training a young dog, I probably train, I don't know, anywhere from 2 to 4 times a week.
But short sessions.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like I'm talking like a half hour.
Yeah.
And then usually we stand around and gab for a little bit. And mm-hmm. then we might train a little bit again. Like I wouldn't do like an hour class. But then I also do an hour class a week as well. But again, you're not training the dog for an hour.
No.
You're doing a bit, taking turns. So when you have like a young dog in training, I would say 2 to 4 times would be normal to do agility. But it can be short training sessions. That could be like going out in the front lawn and like doing some skill stuff and then going back inside.
Yep.
And that could be like your thing for the day. And then in terms of like nowadays with B, who I mentioned at the start of the podcast, she's fairly trained now. I do a class with her a week and then I usually train her, I would say definitely one other time, sometimes two. And I probably wouldn't do it that much if I didn't have to film stuff for my online class. Mm-hmm. I would probably only come in and train her one other time.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice. The online class keeps me
keeps
me accountable and going. But
I'm here. So when I have privates, I train. But yeah. I'm not training for a really long time and I have a puppy. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing like a little bit before my private and maybe a little bit after.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll bring my older dog out and, I don't know, just play around with her. But too much.
Yeah. I think what people need to remember is that agility is really not how you're going to keep your dog fit. You want to, that shouldn't be like their only form of fitness and exercise. So in terms of, like you said this, you probably do fitness stuff more than not. There's lots of different fitness stuff that you can do, but like taking your dog for a walk is not really what we would consider exercise.
No.
That's like taking them out to the bathroom and like a fun little thing. But that's not really going to keep your dog fit for agility. You need to be hiking your dog up and down the hills, swimming. You could bike them. You could do treadmill work. You could do all kinds of things, like more conditioning type of things. And then, of course, there's like actual fitness exercises that you can do as well.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to do more of that personally, like in the winter months. We'll get more into like FitPaws stuff and things like that. I don't do that as much in the summer because I'm hiking and I'm walking
swimming.
So much, swimming so much. But I think it's what's important to remember is that dogs can be regular life fit and not agility fit.
Uh-huh.
And then some people will do agility with their dogs, but then they don't do other things. And both raise your risk for injury. Because lots of times, like this is what happened when people were off with COVID, when they first came back to class, they were like, oh, my dog's been swimming, my dog's been hiking and all these things. You can't just then take that dog, even though they're fit, and then expect them to be able to do agility because they're using entirely different muscles. It's like if you haven't ridden a horse for like how many time and you're a fit person, or you're riding a bike, whatever it might be, and all of a sudden you're
working out, you're not going to go work out and lift the heaviest weights.
Yeah, you're like, oh my God, I haven't used these muscles in forever. But it's the same thing with the dogs, that the fit and the movement for agility is very different than other things. So it's really good to do both, not just one
they
or the other.
Complement each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is really important. Fitness is huge. And like I said, we just did a podcast on injury with dogs. And in that podcast, we spoke
about fitness.
A lot about fitness. Yeah. Okay. And then the other question that she had was also from Lynn. I'm wondering if it's okay to practice at a lower jump height than competition height in order to minimize chance of injury. Or does that make it harder on him when he's asked to jump full height?
I think it's okay to jump lower when you don't have a competition coming up. And then if you do plan on having a competition, then I would start raising the jumps up just before the competition so the dog can get comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. Do it in a gradual process, not all of a sudden, because then that's not fair for the dog. And then that's when an injury could happen.
Yeah. And I think it's dog dependent as well. If you have a dog that typically is a pretty good jumper, it doesn't knock a lot of bars, you know, it's easier to fluctuate their jump height mm-hmm. on a more regular yes. basis.
But if you have a bar knocker,
mm-hmm. it's not always a great idea to mm-hmm. be changing all of the jumps a lot. But then also at the same token, like, you need to consider, why are they knocking the bar? Like, are they not fit? Mm-hmm. Like, there's, are they yeah. being
careless?
Is yeah. being careless? Is it your handling? Like, what's causing it? So mm-hmm. sometimes when you give answers like this, you always have to remember there's like always more sides to the story. You have to kind of be careful. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, for us, like, my dog's a 16-inch jumping dog in competition, and I don't really train her at 16 inches that often unless I have a competition coming mm-hmm. up, and I don't really have anything, so I usually jump her at like 12
yeah
my, or 10
yeah my dog's a 20 inch jumping dog and I practice at 16 usually.
Yeah. So, and again, neither one of our dogs really have a ton of issues with bar knocking or jumping issues yeah. at all, so I think it's easier for us to fluctuate. But if I have students' dogs that maybe are a little bit more not as reliable with the jumping, then I probably wouldn't recommend them going that much lower unless they were like training something. So sometimes if dogs are struggling, we might say like put the jump lower so it's mm-hmm. easier for the dog to navigate the turn or make the lead changes or whatever it might be. But yeah, I think it is okay to fluctuate it. Definitely it minimizes the chance of injury for sure, because it's just easier on your dog's body. But I think it's just a nice thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, makes them have a longer career. We're also really careful in terms of injury, not just about the jumps. Like, I am very conscious about how much I weave my dog. I don't practice weaves every week. I sometimes will go 3 weeks before doing any weaves. But again, you're at the point when, like, my dog knows how to weave. She knows all the things. So, like, I'm not going to practice it all the time then, because it's hard on her. Mm-hmm. I also don't do the A-frame very often, because it's one of the hardest things on their body. Mm-hmm. She knows her A-frame. She's great at her A-frame. So I don't practice it very mm-hmm. often, unless it's like in a sequence or something. Like, there's certain jumping isn't the only thing that you should adapt that's going to reduce injury. There's other obstacles, like tunnels can be really dangerous. Tunnels.
Yeah.
So I think everything's dangerous. so you just need to be careful. But yeah, I think it's important to think about these things for sure. Okay. Well, these were some really great questions.
Excellent.
Yeah. I think
and very different.
Yeah, very different. I think we were all over the map there, which was really, really great. So what we're hoping to do in the future, we're hoping to do some more episodes like this. And we have I have about 200 people in the program, 200 patrons, and which is awesome. And they always ask really great questions. So I thought this was just another way to spark some conversation.
It's great.
Yeah, which is really good. And the other thing that we'll do once a month is do a coaching call where we'll sit down and have like a Zoom. And then usually all their questions have to do with demoing. And then I run around like a crazy person and demo and show a bunch of things, which is really fun too. But I think the questions are great, because lots of times either people ask questions that you didn't even know that you wanted to know the answer to, or like you think that maybe you're having some issue, you're having a thought about something, and then you don't realize that lots of other people have those same questions as well. So that's really great. So guys, if you want to check out some of our other podcasts, we've had some really great topics so far. Make sure you like or subscribe to our podcast. We are on all podcast platforms, so you can listen to us anywhere, or you can watch us on YouTube on McCann Dogs Agility if you want to watch our ridiculousness as well. On that note, we'll see you guys soon. Happy training, and we'll catch you in the next one. Thanks for listening to our McCann Dogs Agility podcast. If you'd like to learn more about us, check out the links in the show notes below. On that note, happy training.